Israel, Am Ishmael Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel, that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Life. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our Eternal Light story today, Tzipora, was written by Sigmund Miller. Charlotte Holland is featured as Tzipora and Roger DeCoven as Leo Baron.
For there is hope of a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease.
The first time I saw her was in Dr. Shaw, the registrar's office. She came in very softly and stood in front of the door, draped in a brightly colored dress, with huge yellow flowers imprinted on it. She wore a wide-brimmed straw hat, gay and so large that we couldn't see her face at all. But there was something extraordinary about her. The stiff, unrelaxed way she stood that caught my attention.
I am Tzipora Stone.
Yes, I know. Please sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Gordon said I should come to see you about going to school here.
Yes, he called me. What course would you like to take?
I don't care.
You must have some preference.
I don't care, Dr. Shaw.
This was a strange answer for all who wish to study at our teacher's training institute come with a great deal of eagerness. I know because I'm an instructor here. I tried to see the face of this strange student, but the wide-brimmed hat obstructed my view.
Most students who enroll have a very definite course in mind and are usually very eager about it.
Mr. Gordon is very anxious for me to study here.
How old are you, Miss Stone?
20.
You live alone?
No. I live with Mr. Gordon and his family. He is my second cousin.
Where is your mother?
Dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. How about your father?
Dead. And so is my brother. And all my relatives, my uncles, aunts, and cousins.
I'm not trying to pry, Miss Stone.
I know.
Where are you from, Tzipora?
Lvov, Poland.
Mr. Gordon mentioned to me that you were a teacher over there, or that you were studying to be a teacher.
I have forgotten everything.
Oh, I'm sure you haven't. Everything will come back to you. Anyway, Tzipora, I think you'll like it here, and I'm sure you'll get along fine. Especially if you let people see your face.
She turned to Dr. Shaw and then slowly lifted her head, and I saw her face. A frozen, rigid face with the lips and mouth set in a mold. A face that had forbidden itself to smile. Her eyes were large and dark. She looked at Dr. Shaw for a moment and then dropped her head again.
I'm going to enroll you, Tzipora. You'll find study here very rewarding, I'm sure of that.
Yes, Dr. Shaw.
We have other students who lived through the war in Europe, and they're doing very well.
I will do my best.
I'm sure you will. That's a very handsome hat you're wearing.
Mrs. Gordon picked it out for me.
Oh. Well, then, Tzipora, I'll be in touch with you in a day or so.
Thank you.
She rose, said goodbye, and walked out, wrapped in her gay summer dress with huge yellow flowers on them. Tzipora Stone was enrolled as a student in the school and began her studies in my class. Day after day, she sat in her seat quietly, rarely moving. Day after day, I looked into those large, dark, unlit eyes of hers that revealed nothing. Perhaps there was nothing to see anymore. Perhaps the light had gone out for good. I couldn't brush her from my mind, even after school hours. One day she didn't come to class, nor the next day, nor for several days after that. It worried me so much that one evening I paid her a visit. Mr. Gordon, her second cousin and guardian, answered the door. He invited me inside.
I sent Sephora away for a week. A vacation. How's she getting on in class?
No better than when she first came to school.
I'd hoped she would come out of it. You wouldn't believe me, I know, but Sephora was one of the gayest, most sparkling creatures I had ever met, and a brilliant student.
Did she ever tell you what happened to her over there?
Never. I don't think she ever will.
It would help if you could get her to tell you.
I know. My wife has tried a dozen times, but Sephora just freezes up. All we know is that everyone is dead. None of her relatives in Europe escaped.
Well, she should be encouraged in those things young women are usually interested in. Clothes, young men.
We've tried. I've had several eligible young men to the house, but she neither encourages nor discourages them. Why, we can't even get her to smile. And Sephora's been here with us over 6 months.
Well, maybe time will thaw her out.
I hope you're right, Mr. Barron. I certainly hope so.
Sephora returned to class. There was no change. She sat quietly in her seat, imprisoned within herself as before. Her face remained as before, expressionless, frozen, and unsmiling. In this manner, weeks went by, and the semester drew to a close. It was time for the students to prepare the term essay. I had chosen a common topic, something simple and light. The subject was an unforgettable June day. The students were given a week to prepare. I promised to read the best of the essays aloud in class. Students, I have selected Miss Deborah Stone's essay as the best in the class. It was not a difficult selection. You will hear it for yourself. I'm going to read it to you. The sun rose up over the rooftops, exploding the pink clouds into tiny, feathery balls. And the day came alive, clear and sharp and sweet. The sun began to shine down
with golden light,
tinting the windows and painting the houses. And now a warm, soft, silky breeze swept over the streets. It was the loveliest of mornings, and the bluest of skies, and all of us who saw it were filled with a painful, passionate love of life. We, who were about to die, standing in front of the barracks, wondered why nature mocked us with this radiant morning. On this June morning, 1,000 of us waited for the Nazi trucks to come and take us off to the gas chambers at Belzenz. On this loveliest of mornings, 1,000 of us waited, without hope and without fear.
Shh! I think I hear the trucks.
No, they're planes. That's what they are, planes.
What is there to do?
Nothing. We are all going to die.
There's a forest right in back of the barracks.
It's too late for the forest.
Stormtroopers guard every street.
I won't go. Let them shoot me.
It's the best way. No torture.
That's what my mother had told me. If they come to take you, she said, don't go. Run away. Let them shoot you in the back. It's far better than the gas chambers or torture. I listened to the frightened, hysterical voices about me. I listened and looked up at the radiant, friendly morning. And as I waited for the green trucks to come, I remembered the last night I spent with my family. It was 11 o'clock of a windy, rainy night here in Lavaux.
They took Dolph Lippmann away today.
Let's not talk about it. What's the use? Let's go to sleep.
Of course, let's go to sleep. To sleep is to forget.
The Allies are going to conquer. The Nazis can't win. We just have to hold out.
It's no use trying to close our eyes to the facts. Every day, 20 Jews, no more, no less, are removed from this street to the gas chambers. They do things with precision and order.
Where's Moshe Cohen and his family? Chaim Gutman and his wife? Aaron Gelb and his sons? All gone. Any night now, they'll come for us.
But father.
I'm the head of this family. I should encourage you, tell you there's hope, but I cannot. There is none.
Let's go to sleep. Zipporah, go to bed. Maybe it's Cousin Esther.
Not at 11 o'clock. It's death to be caught on the street after 9. It's not Cousin Esther.
It's my playmate, Benjamin. He said he would ring 3 times. That's what he said.
It's them. They're coming for us.
Children, if they're going to take us to the gas chamber, try to escape. It's better to die with a bullet in your back. Remember, try to escape. They took my father, my mother, and my sweet younger brother. But they didn't take me, for I was number 21. My father shouted curses at them and they beat him. My mother walked straight with unseeing eyes. And my dear brother, who was always full of wonderful hope, looked at the faces of these monsters. And in that brief, fearing moment, I saw hope die violently in him, leaving him a blanched and terrified and whimpering little boy as they pushed him out of the door. And then suddenly I was alone. My soul screaming with this horror. Not even God can measure the agony. All that long, dreadful, rain-filled night, the whips of anguish lashed at me, inflicting wounds from which no human being can recover.
I stopped reading the essay for a moment. The class was sitting very quietly. Not a student moved. I looked at Zipporah, but she didn't look at me. She was a little paler than usual, but otherwise the rigid, unsmiling mold of her face remained the same. I'd stopped reading only for a few seconds. I picked up the essay and began to read again. The sun rose higher in that twinkling June morning. The prisoners in the wire-fenced courtyard of the barracks were growing silent. The frightful hand of terror
lay heavily upon us all. Before me in that bright sunlight was a sea of gray and ghastly faces waiting for those green trucks to come to take us away. One could get across the wire fence easily enough, but a dozen or more guards with submachine guns watched us carefully. Zipporah, I said, come on, let's run. Like Mama had said, die with a bullet in the back. But I did not want to die. Not even now. The sky was too blue and the sun too warm and friendly, and life was bribing me with its June beauty. Perhaps this lovely day would soften the Nazis. Even they could not think of murder on such a day.
I can't stand it. I hope they come soon.
They'll be here soon enough. Hush, my baby.
It's the trucks.
He won't sleep. No, he hasn't slept all day. He's hungry, isn't he? Very hungry.
They're not coming here. They're not for us.
They were not for us. Not yet. And so we waited as the sun rose toward noon. On the ground near the wire fence, a pair of swallows landed, chirping happily. One of the guards with a submachine gun approached the birds stealthily and threw them a slice of bread. They fled away and then came back to nibble at the slice. They threw them several more slices. All of us stared at the 3 slices of bread lying on the ground near the wire fence. The guard had seemed almost human. His face had warmed with a smile as he watched the birds pecking at the bread. But the birds had flown away now, and a young woman with a thin, silent, emaciated child in her arms ran to retrieve the bread. God, who liked birds, did not like women with emaciated children. That's a quick way to die. No anguish, no waiting. Mercifully fast out of this beautiful June world. Why wait for the trucks to cart you away like cattle in the slaughterhouse? Reach for the bread and all will be over. Every cell in my body recoiled as I moved to where the mother and the child lay still upon the warm earth. I snatched the bread and turned and faced the guard. He looked at me, unbelieving. He raised his gun. I looked at him and waited, quivering. He laughed, put down his gun and turned away.
There's no word for these beasts. No word in any language.
Maybe the child is still alive.
They're both dead. Don't look at them.
Please, could I have a piece of your bread? Yes. Yes, take it. Take all of it. I don't want it. But you risked your life for it. I don't want it. I didn't risk anything. Nothing is cheaper than life here. Give it to your child. Go on. Go on. Thank you. Thank you.
They have made us all crazy.
The sun reached the top of the day, and still the trucks did not come. It was high noon, and now there were no more shadows. The sun crept into every nook and cranny, searching hungrily for shadowy places. This deadly and radiant day moved on. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and still we waited. We were given no food, a sure sign that they planned to murder us all. But the guards grew restless. They needed relaxation.
Hey! Du! Ute! Come here.
The guard pointed to an old man with a short gray beard. The old man fearfully pointed to himself in question.
Yeah, du! Come here!
The guard gestured with his gun in an angry motion at the delay. The old man, with his head bowed, but watching the guard with the fascination of horror, shuffled slowly over to the fence where the guard stood. At the approach to the fence, one of the three guards reached in and grabbed him roughly by the arm, pulling him up fast against the wire. The other pulled out a large red bandana protruding from the old man's pocket and slipped it around the old man's neck and strangled him. We watched, expressionless, soundless, and half-crazed.
They're blood crazy. Blood crazy.
Quiet. Quiet. Don't let them hear you.
Yeah, you are murderers. I have a handkerchief, too. See my handkerchief?
Please.
Come. Murder me.
Please, you love me. One of the guards had taken leisurely aim and shot him. He fell with his arms still outstretched and the handkerchief held tightly in his clenched fist. Then his wife ran over to his sprawling body. But she died before she reached him, falling ungracefully over him. The rest of us stood transfixed, not daring to move, not daring to breathe heavily. We stood like stones. The guard, in a lazy manner, swept his gun slowly up and back, ready to shoot at the slightest quiver of motion. Not even the children moved. For they knew. For well over a minute, he played his gun upon us, reveling in his terrible power. But then his arm grew tired. He lowered his gun and turned away with a laugh. The day approached its end. The old sun, now an incandescent orange, moved down the western sky. The earth seemed on golden fire. And we who saw it, standing in the wire-enclosed yard of the barracks, knew that this was the end of the world.
The trucks! They're coming!
I see them! Yes, they're really coming.
We're going to Belton's.
I'm sure they're going to take us to another camp, a labor camp.
Those trucks go only one way. Two went from Belton's.
Achtung! Entopperheil auf der Zeit! Look!
The trucks aren't facing in the direction of Belton's.
What's the use in hoping?
Da gibt's nicht mehr zu quatschen! Wenn ich gehe, ich werde abgeknallt! Einer nach dem anderen Lastwagen rein! Quatsch!
We rode for a long time as the dusk changed to a dark, moonless night. We entered Lvov, the city of my birth, and began to ride through the dead and darkened streets. We came upon a long, narrow thoroughfare, and then the truck I was on stopped suddenly with a jolt. It became terribly quiet. There was no sound. This was the time to jump out of the truck and escape, for there was no doubt anymore in anyone's mind where we were going. Suddenly, the man alongside of me jumps out of the truck and runs like he's on fire. The guard shoots at him. Without thinking, I jump too, and I run. I was running not to die, but to escape. My back crawls with the expected bullet. I keep running faster and faster. My heart batters against my ribs. Suddenly, the street is lit up by a glaring white searchlight. I run into an open cellar and crouch near a barrel of refuse.
Die können noch nicht weit weg sein. Wir haben sich hier in dem Haus versteckt.
Wir können den Lastwagen nicht aufhalten. Die Besatzungstruppen werden sich schon finden. Gehen wir.
Gehen wir.
I couldn't hold up the trucks. And they were sure that the occupation troops would find me. I don't know how long I stayed there crouching behind the barrel of refuse. Maybe an hour. Maybe four. Finally, I crawled up to the street level. There were several Nazi soldiers combing the street. I backed into the cellar again and moved deeper inside. In utter blackness, I moved slowly on, not knowing where I was or where I was going. I, who had always been afraid of the dark, now found it protective.
Who's this?
Speak up or we'll shoot.
Flash the light.
We're not supposed to. You know the rules.
Just for a moment, quick. We might be ambushed.
It's a woman. One of us.
Come here. Don't be afraid. We're not Nazis.
Who are you?
The underground.
Very deep underground we are, too.
How'd you get here?
I jumped out of a truck. They were taking us to Belsen's. Where am I?
You're at the entrance to a tunnel leading into the river which runs under the city of Lvov. You may yet escape with your life.
Give me your hand. We'll take you to the tunnel.
I can't tell you how grateful I am.
Yeah, none of that.
No one has done anything kind for me for so long.
You're not safe yet. Far from it.
This tunnel, who built it?
A newspaper publisher. He was very wise. He knew that Hitler would someday come and knock on his door.
So every day he and his sons and daughter and his wife would go down to the cell and dig. Not to cause suspicion. Be careful. Yeah. Not to cause suspicion. They carried the earth away in bits, in their pockets, and even in their shoes. The neighbors never knew. For several years, they continued to dig, following the river to the canal.
This tunnel has saved over 1,000 lives.
I never saw the faces of those two men who took me here. But I shall never forget them.
Goodbye, Tabora.
Keep alive.
I began to crawl on the narrow, damp ledge that was hewn out over this underground river. I crawled in the blackest blackness, feeling my way by reaching ahead with my hands. Some unknown person was behind me, and were it not for him, I would never have made it to the canal. I know not how many times I lost consciousness, but each time I was goaded on.
Move.
I dragged myself ahead, moving in a nightmare.
Move.
Halfway through the tunnel, all my strength oozed out. I would have rolled off into the river if I could, but I didn't even have strength for that.
Move. Move.
I don't remember the rest of the way at all. I don't know how I got through the rest of the 50 yards. The next thing I knew, several pairs of hands grabbed me and picked me up. When I had recovered enough to look around, I saw that I was in a large space before a canal. In the pale, wavering candlelight, I saw a long row of people. Women, children, and men. But not very old people. The old lay somewhere in the bottom of the nameless Black River. The rest of us who survived felt nothing. Because anguish, fatigue, and fear had dried us up.
You're safe for the time being, but soon you must go out on your own. Perhaps some of you can find friends with whom you can hide out. Some of you might escape to the side of our lives. Whatever you do, may God be with you.
When he finished, the man smiled kindly upon us all. They brought us food. I had forgotten hunger. I hadn't eaten since yesterday morning. As I ate, I saw that a boy alongside of me still had his watch. What time is it, friend?
Almost midnight. Just another minute more.
And so ended my most memorable day in June. So unforgettable that I cannot stop thinking of it since it happened.
That is how she ended her essay. The class said nothing. No one applauded. They were all very sober, as if in the presence of a tragedy. When the class was over, I asked Tipura to stay for a few minutes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Barron. I should have written something like, "That's what you really wanted."
Oh, I'm glad you wrote this. Look at me, Tipura.
Yes, sir.
How old do you think I am?
I don't know.
Oh, I'd like you to guess. Go on, I won't be hurt no matter what you say.
About 43?
Not very accurate, Sephora. Maybe it's my gray hair that misleads you. You see, I'm only 30.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Barron.
It's not your fault, Sephora. You see, I was at Belden.
You?
Yes, Sephora. Please call me Leo. That's my first name.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Leo.
I took her by both hands, and I smiled. She looked at me for a long time, and then smiled back. The eternal light in people does not snuff out so easily. Our Eternal Light drama today, Tzipora, was written by Sigmund Miller and was based on an essay by Tzipora Wynn. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Charlotte Holland was featured as Tzipora and Roger de Koven as Leo Barron. The entire production was under the direction of Edward King. Free time to present the Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.